Thanks so much, Michelle. That was such a great presentation and a tough act to follow. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Yuna Kim, and I'm here today on behalf of Ben Meyer and myself. We'd like to talk to you about our project, Legal Accountability through UN Treaty Bodies. So human rights treaty bodies are the principal mechanism for monitoring states to ensure that they're upholding their human rights obligations. So it's important that we can understand and that we strive to understand the effectiveness of this accountability mechanism. Today I'd like to talk to you about examining human rights treaty monitoring on water and sanitation. Basically, we want to try and understand what exactly states are reporting to these treaty bodies and identify any areas where accountability can be strengthened. So in that spirit, the goal of this project is to examine the content of state reports to treaty bodies and to identify any relationship between human rights advancements and state reporting on water and sanitation. In this presentation, I'll first explain the development of the human rights to water and sanitation. I'll then talk about the implementation of human rights and the role of human rights treaty bodies in monitoring and ensuring accountability. And lastly, I'll go over our findings. I'll talk about the evolution of state human rights reporting, specifically with respect to water and sanitation, and whether monitoring has led to increased accountability for the implementation of these human rights. Okay, so first a little bit of history. Despite a pressing public health implication pressing public health implications of inadequate water and sanitation, global governance has only recently looked to the human rights system as a means to address these issues. In 1977, there was the human right to water was first recognized at the UN Water Conference in Mar del Plata. From this, the UN General Assembly worked to clarify this right to water, and they did so by working through the rights to an adequate standard of living and a right to health. For instance, in 1979, we had the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, which called for a state obligation to ensure women had adequate sanitation and water supply. And then we had the Convention on the Rights of the Child in 1989, which called for states to combat disease and malnutrition through the provision of adequate nutritious food and clean drinking water. Jumping forward to 2002, the Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights adopted General Comment 15, which defined the scope and content of an independent right to water. This right was read into existing provisions of an adequate standard of living and the right to health in the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. And with public attention increasingly drawn towards the harms of inadequate water and sanitation, the UN General Assembly in 2010 adopted a resolution on the human rights to water and sanitation, which represented international consensus on the scope and content of a distinct right to water and sanitation. However, with these rights in place, there needs to be a way to monitor the implementation of these rights and ensure states are being held accountable in realizing these rights. This monitoring responsibility primarily falls to human rights treaty bodies. Human rights treaty bodies monitor the implementation of human rights and hold states accountable by requiring them to submit reports. So the Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, or the CESCR, is one of those human rights treaty bodies and is the one responsible for monitoring the implementation of the rights to water and sanitation. In addition to reviewing reports, the CESCR also issues general comments to interpret the meaning and scope of any given right. And the reporting process works much like this. So first, member states are required to report to the treaty body on progress in implementing human rights within their country. These reports are submitted about every 4 to 5 years. And once submitted, the human rights treaty body engages in a formal review of the state report. They then engage in a constructive dialogue with the state, discussing implementation efforts. They then provide concluding observations to recognize state efforts in implementing these rights. And lastly, they note areas of concern with regard to specific rights and recommend future steps to be taken to further enhance the implementation of these rights. So how do we actually figure out whether states are consistently reporting on water and sanitation? And how do we figure out if there have been any changes over time? So we wanted to look at the information states are reporting in the reports, and we thought that qualitative coding would be an excellent way to analyze this. In past studies, researchers have done a keyword search and have essentially counted the number of times specific words pop up in reports. And the result would be something like this word cloud, where the larger the word is indicates a more frequent appearance of a word in a given document. So this is really great, and it's really pretty, and I like it a lot. But there are a couple weaknesses to this approach. For instance, you can't really identify the ideas that are conveyed in the reports, nor can you quite understand trends over time and how reporting has changed dynamically. And lastly, it doesn't really give us a clear idea of the institutions driving any changes that we might see in reporting. So to get at that dynamic evolution over time, and to get a sense of how state reporting practices are changing, we need to be able to pick out those important ideas. So the first step in doing this is to collect all the state reports. And we had a very dedicated research team of 3 students who collected the 170 reports that were submitted to the committee between 1999 and 2012. We then put together a codebook to identify any relevant ideas or indicators that describe the ways that states might discuss the rights to water and sanitation. We verified these codes with subject matter experts, including, as you can see in this picture here, the UN Special Rapporteur to Water and Sanitation, Katarina d'Albuquerque. And at the end, we feel that we developed a codebook that identified the various ideas related to the rights to water and sanitation, including things like the type of information that might be reported, the population addressed, the context of reference, or the sphere of life in which we might expect states to discuss the rights to water and sanitation. Our research team then received extensive training on the definition and meaning of each of these codes that you see here, and then they went to work. They took the 170 reports, and they looked at the reports paragraph by paragraph, highlighting the areas where water and sanitation issues were discussed in the report. We asked the coders to apply these codes at the paragraph level, and they were asked to apply one or more codes that reflected any of these water and sanitation indicators that we see here. To confirm the accuracy of our results, we held weekly meetings with the entire project team to ensure that we were all on the same page in our understanding of these definitions. We also made sure that we resolved any discrepancies in the understanding or application of these codes to the report, and that was our way of ensuring a high degree of inter-relator reliability between our coders. Through the qualitative analysis software Atlas TI, we were then able to take that coded data and run a whole bunch of analysis on it. Our analytic strategy involved examining state reports by year and looking for any changes that might have occurred. We also divided the state reports into 4 time periods reflecting normative changes in the content of human rights. And finally, we examined how state reporting might have changed in response to CESCR updates to the reporting guidelines. So we feel that this is a very, or this coding process represents a novel approach to understanding the scope and content of state reports. And I'd like to share some of those results with you today. So this is a graph of the number of water and sanitation codes per paragraph, which essentially measures how much focus states gave to water and sanitation issues in their reports. So as you can see here, there's quite a bit of variation over time, And most notably, we see an uptick in the number of codes per paragraph in the latter years, particularly following 2010. We can also see how states have responded to the development of the normative content of human rights to water for water and sanitation. So prior to General Comment 15, that is before 2003, virtually none of the states explicitly raised the right to water. They did discuss water and sanitation in other sections, such as the right to housing and the right to health, but it was not clearly stated as in a category called right to water. With General Comment 15, and eventually with the UN General Assembly resolution in 2010, more and more states, we see they've begun to acknowledge this explicit right to water. Yet, even with the 2008 reporting guidelines, which clearly outlined that states should discuss and report on a right to water, not all states, we don't have 100% compliance in states actually saying, here's the right to water section in our report. So although we're seeing an increase in the breadth of reporting among countries, this increase in breadth has been accompanied by a decrease in the depth of reporting, particularly following General Comment 15. So we can see two things in this graph. The first is that following General Comment 15, again, which was November 2002, the depth of reporting slightly decreased and increasing again only following the 2010 UN General Assembly resolution. So this might suggest the weakness of pronouncements from within the UN human rights system, that is, pronouncements from the committee as opposed to resolutions passed by the entire assembly. So while the committee has sought to increase state obligations to enforcing water and sanitation rights, the effect on reporting is not apparent, and it's likely due to the lack of standardization in defining particular aspects to these rights. The second thing we can see here is that there's a great disparity in reporting between developing and developed countries. So the red bars being the developing countries and the blue bars being the developed countries, it's quite clear to see that developing countries are reporting at far greater levels and far greater depth than developed countries. You can also see that developed countries don't really change much over time. So all of those peaks and valleys that we saw in that initial line graph are largely being driven by developing countries. Also, what we thought was interesting was that this difference between developing and developed countries was true for virtually all of the indicators that we had in our code book. So we then grouped our results by normative developments in the evolution of rights to water and sanitation. And again, we see a decreasing focus on public health implications of inadequate water and sanitation in the years leading up to the 2010 UN General Assembly resolution. So given that water and sanitation are recognized as underlying determinants to public health, we would expect that discussions of water and sanitation would be closely linked to discussions of health. But as you can see from this graph, that's not exactly true. Following General Comment 15, which developed an independent right to water, there was actually an overall decline in... There was an overall decline in the reporting of water with respect to health, sanitation, and hygiene. This reflects that the implementation of such intersectional rights, that is, rights at the intersection of health and water, was not being considered by states at this time. It's only after the 2010 General Assembly resolution that state reporting on the interrelationship between health and water and sanitation returned to pre-2002 levels. So this analysis, we believe, highlights the great inconsistency in reporting on water and sanitation, both over time and across countries. Certain types of countries are reporting far more extensively on water and sanitation, and different aspects of the right to water and sanitation receive varying levels of attention. These results point to difficulty in setting aspirational human rights norms without providing any detail to the states on how these rights should be interpreted, implemented, and discussed. In fact, there's actually a great deal of variation that we found in our data that some states would have zero mention of water and sanitation, while others would devote quite a bit of space in their reports to the discussion of water and sanitation. So this inconsistency in reporting creates obstacles for the committee in their efforts to monitor the implementation of the rights to water and sanitation. And these findings create an imperative to standardize reporting. We can achieve consistency in reporting, we can achieve consistency by developing universal indicators for CESCR reporting on the human rights to water and sanitation. These indicators should be developed in collaboration with subject matter experts who understand data availability and also with the state governments in order to ensure political buy-in. It's only through state reporting of metrics that reflect underlying human rights then can the committee facilitate accountability for realizing these rights to water and sanitation. So thank you very much for your time. I hope that this discussion proves relevant in the development of universal indicators, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.